This is Rocky Mountain Voices. You're listening to the vSpring V100 show, powered by PodTech.
If I were to point to one single problem with startup sales organizations, what I would say is the absence of what I call a repeatable, scalable sales model.
Welcome to the V100 show. My name is Dennis Wood. The V100 is a group of community-nominated and peer-selected professionals, executives who have been voted most likely to be successful in a venture in the coming 5 to 7 years in the Intermountain West region. I'm here today with Jack Carroll, who is the CEO of Mentor Associates. Jack is a sales strategist, consultant, and teacher. Welcome to the show, Jack.
Thanks, Dennis. I appreciate it, and it's my honor to be here.
Jack, would you just take a moment to tell us a little bit about your background?
Sure. What I always say is I graduated liberal arts from college and didn't know what to do with that, so I went into sales. And through a long learning curve in the sales profession, I grew to where I was a trainer and a teacher of sales in a technology industry. My first technology industry experience was in 1982 at Capro Corporation. And since that time, I've worked with over 65 technology companies in what I call optimizing sales in their organizations. And by the way, this is sales in a business-to-business format as opposed to business-to-consumers.
Capro, do you mind just take a moment to explain Capro?
Capro was a portable computer startup that preceded Compaq Computer in the marketplace with what was called a portable in those days, but it was a 29-pound luggable. It was, but it was something that you could carry away from the desk. And the company that went from absolute zero in 1982 to a run rate of almost $15,000 a month, or over close to $200,000 a year in a 13-month period of time. Hmm. And I put together their sales organization in 13 regional offices throughout the United States and built the sales model for that company. And when I saw what happened in a technology environment and the kind of action that was available in a technology format, I said, this is where I'm going to live for the rest of my life. And I have.
And you now run an organization called Mentor Associates, which is a sales consulting organization. And I just wanted to, Jack, you have an incredible background in sales and in building sales organizations from the ground up. Few people seem to have the depth and the breadth of experience that you do, and especially in technology and also in startup companies. Tell us what is missing in most startup sales organizations that you see?
Most startup sales organizations don't have the experience or the models to follow in order to follow a disciplined approach to the sales process with their customers. There's a lot of guesswork. There's a lot of ad hoc activity on the part of the CEOs and the leaders of those companies, the vice presidents of sales that they hire to run the sales organizations, and the salespeople. And very rarely, if I were to point to one single problem with those companies, what I would say is the absence of a repeatable, what I call a repeatable, scalable sales model that can be learned, followed, and implemented by anyone who joins the organization.
Why is it absent, do you think?
I think it's absent mostly because they don't know how to build it, and they don't. There are apparently not a lot of people who they can go to help them put that together inside of their companies. Yeah. So they don't build it because they don't know it can be built.
Right, right. So what then do you find is kind of common in most, especially again, kind of the startup organization, sales organization, what competencies do you see that are abundant actually?
Generally, they have people driven by the CEO or the founder of the company who have a very good knowledge and sense of a product need, a market for that product need, and a product in some way on their side that fulfills that need with customers. And almost always, my observation is that the CEO has a very keen ability to either intuitively understand the important factors of a sales situation when he's selling to a customer and is able to do it effectively and successfully. But that particular piece, unfortunately, is something that he or she can do,
and
not teach anybody else how to do, because they're not teachers, they're doers.
So what is the consequence of this inability to set up this, you know, a systematic approach to sales?
The problem is, when you can't set up a systematic approach to sales, you're always relying on bringing in people who on their own know how to do things in order to generate that same kind of activity. And after all, they are salespeople.
Yeah.
So when you're interviewing them in the hiring process, they sound like they can do anything.
Yeah.
They sound like they can walk on water. And then you bring them into your company and you find not only can they not walk on water, but they can't really even sell very well.
Yeah.
And usually what happens is you lose a lot of time and energy and you begin grinding out the sales organization, again, attempting to replicate the early successes of the product in the market that were experienced by the CEO.
How is this knowledge captured then? How can a sales organization go from being, not understanding the details of their sales process and specifically performing that initial triage and setting up, you know, how do we qualify candidates or prospects or suspects and so forth, to being a learning, agile and methodical sales organization?
I think step number one, Dennis, is they have to admit to themselves that they don't already know how to sell to their customers on any kind of a repeatable basis,
mm-hmm.
or a basis that's replicatable, if
mm-hmm.
you will,
mm-hmm.
among other people. And once they've admitted that to themselves and opened themselves up to bringing someone else in who might even be able to do it, mm-hmm. or hiring a vice president of sales who has the credentials to do it, not just the credentials to do it themselves, but who has actual hands-on experience that can be verified and knowledge that can be verified. You and I talked offline a little earlier about the questions that you can ask in the interviewing process to determine whether or not someone really knows what they're talking about, or whether or not they were what I call the phenomenon that so often happens in technology. I don't know if you've ever heard it or not. They say in a hurricane, even turkeys can fly.
Yeah.
There's an awful lot of, in a hurricane, there's a lot of turkeys who are out there flying in hurricanes,
yeah.
who when they get out in situ, but hurricanes only happen in one situation out of 25 or 30.
It's not repeatable.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What it means is that if the market circumstances are perfect and the product is just right for the marketplace, you can be the worst sales strategist in the world and be successful.
Yeah, I interview a lot of sales executives really every day. And I can tell you that what I've learned from my observation, a really great sales executive versus a mediocre one, you could take the former and put them in a sales situation, or put them both in a sales situation. And then you can ask them both, now, how do you know that was a successful meeting? They may both think that it was successful, but one is able to tell you the specific things that the prospect said that answers a very specific set of criteria that they have created, that they can now advance them from suspect to whatever is next in the funnel. Whereas the latter salesperson will just get warm fuzzies. They'll say, well, they seemed enthusiastic. Maybe they expressed a need or something, but they won't be as empirical about their response at all.
Yeah. Actually, I would say, I agree with you 100%. I would say if someone is successful in an individual sales meeting, what it meant was that before they went into that meeting, they had a plan with a primary objective and a secondary objective. And if in a post-meeting analysis, they determined that they accomplished their primary and or secondary objective, then it was a successful meeting.
So much of it is knowing before you even go into the meeting precisely what it is you're looking to get out of the meeting as a salesperson.
Either that or being the best improviser in the world, which one salesperson in 100 is.
Yeah.
99 out of 100 need to rely on a plan. And unfortunately, most companies don't provide them with that kind of a plan.
You know, there are several steps to a sales process. There's maybe identifying who your audience is. There's qualifying. There are probably, seven or eight other steps post that. As you look at all of the different steps in the sales process, what would you say is the most critical of all of those steps?
Well, the most critical is on the front end. It's actually in my sales process, or what I identify as a generic sales process that has to be modified to individual companies. It would be phase two, and phase two is customer or lead qualification.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is most salespeople and most sales organizations don't do a deep enough qualification on the front end, so they wind up wasting a lot of time, money, and energy on customers who are not qualified to buy their products. So the problem is they load up pipelines with all kinds of unqualified deals and get all kinds of missed signals when those deals don't come to fruition.
Yeah, so they waste their time on what they thought was a strong candidate to purchase, when in fact, because they haven't set up their qualifications processes properly, they really are just wasting their time.
Most of what they thought about that client was wishful thinking.
Yeah.
If they actually had established a process as a part of lead qualification that had objectively measurable steps in it. And that's what you need to do in lead qualification, is pass-fail. Instead of trying to qualify people in, which psychologically most salespeople try to do.
We want to believe that they're close to buying, of course.
You should be more attuned to qualifying them out or disqualifying them,
if you will. You have hired hundreds, if not thousands, of salespeople over the course of your career, or at least assessed sales executives. When you're interviewing a sales executive, what do you look for and what do you listen for to know that this person can, in fact, perform?
I look for how much they listen to what I'm saying, because I've learned in a process to give them very clear information about what it is I'm expecting from the interview or from the process of engaging with them. And my clarity is it's 100% because it's planned, it's rehearsed, and it's executed. If I ask them to be clear about something and they no longer even address it in the sales situation, I tell them exactly what it is I'm looking for in a salesperson, a VP of sales, and if they don't come back at me with 19 rounds of ammunition that are firing on that target, then they're not listening to me.
Which makes me think that part of being a great salesperson is having an insatiable appetite for knowledge. Because if you have that appetite, then I would imagine that the listening is almost a byproduct for this you know, burning desire to know more information.
Yeah, it's an insatiable desire to learn, really. And there's so much to learn about sales. Yeah. There's so much to learn. I've been at it for 35 years. And I'm still learning every day. When I get together with a group of people in either a training or a consulting kind of a situation, there's no one in the room who learns more than I do, because I'm willing to learn, and because of what I've done for so many years, I have more maps in place in order to be able to learn from.
It seems that nowhere is it more true than in sales that knowledge is power.
Yeah.
Let me just ask you a personal question, and that is, Jack, if you could spend time with anyone, you know, living or not living, that you've just always admired in your life, who would that be?
Yeah, I think that the most impressive individual I've ever known in my life, and I think he's probably the greatest figure of the 20th century, was Martin Luther King Jr. And I had a very small piece of personal history with Martin Luther King Jr. back in 1968, when I was a young man back in Chicago. Martin Luther King Jr. came to Chicago to prove to the entire world that there was more prejudice, or as much prejudice, in the North as there was in the South. And he came to my old neighborhood that I was born and raised in Chicago, Marquette Park on the southwest side. I'm not even sure I should identify that, but there it is anyway. Yeah. And I don't know if anyone remembers of that or not, but I marched with King at Marquette Park.
Wow.
And they threw rocks and stones at King. And it was like, it shocked the United States, because they were used to prejudice from people in the South. And through the Selma marches and all of the things that had happened in the South, but they just weren't looking for that. But they saw what it was all about in Chicago at Marquette Park.
Great person. Thank you for sharing that. Jack Carroll, thank you for being on the V100 show today.
My pleasure, Dennis. It has really been very, very interesting questions and very engaging conversation.
Yeah, it's an important subject for all startup companies, no doubt. Now, your company, Mentor Associates, if people want to get a hold of you, how can they reach you?
Probably the best is through the website, and it's www.saleslinks.com.
Great. Thank you for being here, Jack.
My pleasure, Dennis. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
This has been a Rocky Mountain Voices podcast. Visit us on the internet at www.rockymountainvoices.com.